So, were you there when they crucified my Lord? Were you there when they nailed him to the cross? Were you there when they laid him in the tomb? Were you there when God raised him from the dead? On the face of it, the answer is simple. Of course we went there. It was 2,000 years ago. I have an alibi. I have an excuse. The question, or the questions, as we have just sung them, come from a fairly well-known African-American spiritual, a song of Christian slaves in America that probably predates the American Civil War of the 1860s and has evolved over time before first being written down in 1899 in William Barton's Old Plantation Hymns. And there are still many versions, and it continues to change. So, of course, the song doesn't go back as far as the early church in the book of Acts, or even the first disciples a little bit before that. But if the first disciples of Jesus had sung that, then I wonder what their service would have been like. Were you there when they crucified my Lord? Well, it was a bit dangerous for us after that unfair trial of Jesus, so we thought it best to keep our distance. Were you there when they nailed him to the cross? Well, at least John was there to provide support and comfort to Jesus' mother Mary, but, well, he knew her better than we did. Were you there when they laid him in the tomb? Well, Joseph of Arimathea took care of that. There was only one body and only one tomb, so really any more would have been too difficult for us to all get involved. Were you there when God raised him from the dead? Now you're talking. We don't know the exact time that God raised Jesus from the dead. Some of the women were the first to visit the tomb, and then Peter and John ran there pretty fast. And the rest of us, well, we went too far behind to hear the good news. And a verse, especially for Thomas. Were you there when Jesus first showed his nail-scarred hands? Ouch, that's a little unfair. That must have caused him to tremble, tremble, tremble. Thomas is one of my favourite disciples. We don't know a lot about him. We don't know what job he did before he was first called by Jesus. And he only gets a few mentions in the gospel stories. The one that we have read is the most well known. But I feel that in many ways I can relate to him. Thomas in Aramaic means twin, also called Didymus, which in Greek means twin. Thomas is also my middle name in memory of a greatly respected Christian friend of my parents called Thomas, or Tom Harrison. And I am also a twin, but my mother didn't know that she was expecting twins until I was born. And my older sister was disappointed with the news that she had two new baby brothers, declaring, "But I only wanted one." Thomas is best known as Doubting Thomas, but I think he probably had a more accurate, although short-lived, nickname of If Only, in the same way that I once had a short-lived nickname of Arbut. More about that later. So back to the Bible passage, John chapter 20, picking it up at verse 24. Now Thomas, called Didymus, one of the 12, was not with the disciples when Jesus came. Why? This was the first Sunday after the Resurrection Sunday, now commonly known as Easter Sunday. Coincidentally, or maybe not, today is the first Sunday after our Easter Sunday, 2022. Although, as Mike mentioned, today in the Orthodox Church in places like Ukraine, today is their Easter Day. We don't know why Thomas wasn't present. Perhaps Thomas didn't receive the email invite. Perhaps he was stuck in traffic. Perhaps he was ill at home with COVID. Perhaps he was too despondent to meet because the last he knew, Jesus had been crucified and was buried. Or perhaps the opposite. Perhaps he was brave and didn't see a need to meet behind locked doors like the other disciples. Perhaps it doesn't matter why he wasn't there at that first meeting, only to acknowledge that he wasn't there and his experience was a little different to all the other disciples. Verse 25. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." Is this a wind-up? Some form of cruel, practical joke just to trick me because I was the only one that was not there last night? How insensitive. Jesus was as much my friend and teacher as theirs, and it is only 1 week since he was crucified. But hang on. They all seem quite convinced that they've met with Jesus. They all seem to have the same story, and more importantly, they all seem very excited about it and are acting differently. It's difficult to explain, but they are. Is it possible that I've messed up and missed out big time? If only I had been there, then I too could believe. If only I hadn't messed up. Is there something I have done to miss out on God's blessing? If only Jesus loved me as much as the others and waited until we'd all been together. But perhaps I'm reading too much into the situation. If only I'd been there, perhaps I would never know for the rest of my life that Jesus has truly risen from the dead. If only it wasn't me that now has the nickname, "If Only." Verse 25 continues, "Unless I seal the nail marks in his hands and put my fingers where the nails were and put my hands into his side, I will not believe it." It really should have been enough for Thomas to trust the testimony of 10 men. That's a jury full, of course. Especially 10 pious Jews that were his fellow disciples, his friends, all of whom surely knew the 9th commandment, "You shall not give false testimony." Thomas wanted evidence, but he was also making excuses and struggling to believe. And these are areas in which I, and maybe you, feel that you can relate to him. Firstly, in my work as an auditor, I'm always looking for evidence that rules and procedures have been correctly followed, that income and expenditure is properly accounted for and used for the right purposes. Perhaps this is one of the reasons that I struggle with a lack of integrity at the heart of government right now. Secondly, looking for evidence was also one of the reasons that I came to faith a year or two after my twin brother and a few other of my friends from a church youth group. They had trusted and believed the testimony, the witness of the visiting youth worker, a guy called Steve Chalk, before he was better known for other reasons. But I wanted proof, or at least a much stronger argument, not realizing that the Christian faith does require some element of faith. All this struggling to believe takes me back to my short-lived nickname of R-Butts. My parents would tell me something, ask me to do something, but in my superior knowledge and reasoning as an educated 10-year-old, I would come up with some excuse or alternative view. But have you thought about, and so I would go on, or but that's not possible because, but unfortunately, almost every time I lost my trail of thoughts before the end of my sentence, and my parents started calling me but, and I soon realized that excuses are not always good, and that way of talking was quite short-lived. Verse 26, a week later, his disciples were in the house again, and Thomas was with them. Though the doors were locked, Jesus came among them and said, "Peace be with you." How did Jesus enter the locked room again? I don't know. The disciples may possibly have come from a faith and a culture that more readily accepted spiritual explanations for what they saw around them, but I'm sure that they didn't fully understand either. But what I do believe is that Jesus was both flesh and bones and also spirit. He was fully man and fully God. And Jesus stood amongst his disciples, all of whom had betrayed him, rejected him and doubted him in different ways, not just Thomas. Surely Jesus would have wanted to chastise them all, or perhaps even boast in his resurrection glory. Look at me, guys. I was dead, but now I'm alive forevermore. But this isn't how it was. This isn't what Jesus was like. Instead, he greets them with the word, peace. Peace be with you. You may be afraid of me and not understand what you are seeing or experiencing. Peace. You may be concerned about what is going to happen to you in the coming days, weeks, months, or years. Peace. You may think that your relationship with me and with God the Father is irreconcilably broken. Peace. Verse 27. Then he said to Thomas, put your finger here. See my hands. Reach out your hand and put it into my side. Stop doubting and believe. This second encounter was specially for Thomas. Like the good shepherd that he is, Jesus, the good shepherd, has come looking for Thomas, the lost sheep. He offered him forgiveness, a second chance, restoration. Jesus, of course, knew that Thomas was missing the week before. He knew the reason why he wasn't there, even if we don't. He knew what Thomas had said about the nails and hands, and more importantly, he understood that Thomas had fears and doubts. Jesus spoke to Thomas directly. He singled him out, the disciple that for some reason had not been with the others 1 week earlier, the disciple that had doubted the resurrection. If I was Jesus, I would think I would have been annoyed, frustrated, angry, and harsh with Thomas. But instead, he fully understood Thomas with his doubts, his regrets, and his if-onlys. Jesus spoke words of love, tenderness, and sensitivity. J.C. Ryle, the first Anglican bishop of Liverpool, explained it beautifully. He said that Jesus told Thomas to be a believer, shake off this habit of doubting. We don't know if Thomas actually did reach out and touch Jesus. I don't think that he did. Merely seeing Jesus, whom he recognized, and hearing his voice was probably enough. There is also nothing to suggest that any of the other disciples had felt the need to touch Jesus at the first encounter 7 days before. Verse 28. Thomas said to him, my Lord and my God. Thomas, doubting Thomas. Thomas the unbeliever. Thomas with the nickname that he can't seem to shake off has spontaneously uttered words of greater faith and understanding than any of the other disciples. Peter had declared, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. We read that in Matthew chapter 16. But that was prompted by a question from Jesus, and it was words revealed to him by the Father. So the words of Thomas seem more profound. My Lord and my God. Under other circumstances, this would have been blasphemy, but it wasn't challenged by the 10 witnesses who were present. And more importantly, the declaration and adoration has been fully accepted by Jesus without question. Yes, it may have been better if Thomas had believed without the need to see Jesus in the flesh, but he was honest and open with his doubts. He still wanted to encounter the risen Christ. He still wanted to believe, and now he did. Perhaps Thomas still had doubts. I'm sure that there was still a lot that he didn't understand, but he believed. And he was loved, accepted, and forgiven. It is recorded in the book of Acts that all the disciples, including Thomas, therefore, all the disciples were there on the day of Pentecost. So at least he wasn't missing on that occasion. And I'm sure the testimony of Thomas, amongst the others, helped encourage and build up the early church. So what about you? What are your if-onlys? Do you have regrets in life or regrets in your Christian faith? What about your are-buts? What are your excuses in life or excuses in your Christian faith? If only I hadn't missed that Christian event from what I've heard, God showed up. But it would be easier for me to trust if I had a greater sense of God's presence in my life. If only I hadn't messed up, I'm sure my actions mean that God is less likely to bless me. But I can't get too involved because I don't have the same gifts as other people. If only I could turn the clock back when things at church or at home were different. And so the list goes on. You may have your own examples. I certainly could add to that list for myself. I certainly struggle with doubts, excuses, and regrets. I believe that Jesus knows us better than we know ourselves. He knows our regrets and excuses, as well as our joys and our confidences in faith, of course. Whatever our situation, whatever our circumstances, he greets us, peace, peace be with you. Whatever your regrets, peace. Whatever your excuses, peace. Whatever your worries, peace. And if you don't have any regrets, excuses or worries, peace. He is our good shepherd. He has searched and found each one of us. He cares for us. He is the God of second chances and third and fourth, or however many times we need to be forgiven. He wants us to know him and to be in relationship with him. More than that, he wants to help us with our regrets and excuses. We can't reach out and touch him, at least not in a physical sense. But it's not blind faith expected of us either. We have witnesses within our church family here. We can encourage one another and speak of our experiences and Christian understanding. We have evidences. For me, the beauty and complexity of planet Earth and all the creatures that exist speak of an all-powerful, loving Creator God. Yesterday morning, I spent about an hour in the Natural History Museum at Oxford looking at all the insects, and my reaction was just wow, amazement and wonder. What an incredible God we have. And we have the Bible, including the story of God's revelation to his people throughout the Old Testament, the life and death and resurrection of Jesus, including the encounter with Thomas and the establishment of the Holy Church, of the early church. And we have the Holy Spirit. So what is our response? In faith, are we able to utter the words, my Lord and my God? I started with the questions, were you there when they crucified my Lord? Were you there when God raised him from the dead? Perhaps the answer should really have been yes. It was to forgive my sins that he was nailed on the cross. And now he is alive, and I am alive in him. Was he there? Was I there? Yes. And I continue to meet with him and believe in the risen Jesus. Here in the love of Christ I stand. Here in the death of Christ I live. Here in the power of Christ I'll stand. Amen.